Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Regina, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care program. That we're doing this program today in collaboration with the Melanoma Research Foundation. It's a wonderful resource, and you'll be hearing more about this as the program progresses. And today's program is part two of Living with Advanced Skin Cancer and Melanoma, and the title is Emerging Treatments for Metastatic Melanoma. Today's program is supported by Bristol-Myers Squibb and a grant from Genentech. I really want to thank them for their support of the program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I do want to go over with you just a little bit about who's on the program. So we have over 200 participants on the program today. You come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Canada and the United Kingdom. So it's a global call as well. And it's a credit to each of you that you're spending the next hour with us. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Gregory Daniels. Dr. Daniels is Professor of Medicine, UC San Diego Morris Cancer Center. And Dr. Daniels is going to be addressing an overview of metastatic melanoma, including diagnosing and staging, new treatment approaches, and the role of immunotherapy. It's really my great pleasure to introduce to you my esteemed colleague, Dr. Gregory Daniels.
Great. Thank you, Carolyn. And thank you, Cancer Care, for putting these on over the years. It's been a great resource. And so, as Dr. Messner says, I'm tasked with giving an overview of melanoma and then expanding on immune therapy and metastatic disease. So, overview. Melanoma. We all know the word, but I just want to define that melanoma, which is a cancer that comes from the pigment-making cells that make melanin, and we have these cells on the skin. Even in very pale type of skin that's susceptible to burning, we still have melanocytes and melanin in the skin. We just don't have very much. All the way to darker-skinned individuals having these melanin-producing cells. And all patients with melanocytes are susceptible to getting a melanoma on the skin. It just varies according to skin type. However, there's also melanin in our eyes. There's melanin in our gut tract. And so these are also areas where melanoma can arise, so ocular melanomas, mucosal melanomas. And they have a little bit different biology because how they develop into melanomas is different. And so today's discussion really is going to focus primarily on skin melanomas, although targeted therapies that Dr. Memmi will discuss can be used in these other melanomas too. But I'll limit my discussion mainly to the skin, which is the most common type of melanoma. And luckily, most melanomas on the skin are discovered at an early stage. Stage is our nomenclature to describe how much any cancer has spread. And so we have stage zero, which is the cancer is not quite a cancer. And that's, we define melanoma in situ, which is a pre-melanoma state, as stage zero disease. But if it becomes invasive melanoma, we start giving it stages anywhere from 1 to 4. 1 is a thin melanoma localized, 2 is deeper, 3 has lymph nodes involved, and 4 is a melanoma that's gotten into the bloodstream. And early on, and later too, our goal is to cure melanoma. And so excision by a surgeon or a dermatologist is often curative for melanomas. And for some, we also need to assess the lymph node involvement at the time of initial therapy. And again, most melanomas are going to stop before they end up seeing a medical oncologist for more extensive disease. If you do have a deeper tumor or one where it's discovered that lymph nodes are positive, We may use immune therapies either before, during, or after the resection period to help control the disease. So this is all kind of earlier stage before we get to what we call metastatic disease. Despite a army of dermatologists and primary care physicians and everybody watching their skin, despite these surgical techniques, there is a percentage of patients that will either recur with their melanoma outside the original area, or they present to their healthcare provider with metastatic disease. And again, metastatic disease is something where the cancer's gotten into the bloodstream and spread to another site. Even with the spread of a cancer in melanoma, similar to some other cancers, but unfortunately not everyone, the goal is to still try to cure the patient. And the tools that we have to do this remain surgery and radiation, but we start to work in more of these systemic treatments. So if, for example, the melanoma shows up as a single lesion or no more than four lesions, sometimes your treatment team will talk to you still about surgery and or radiation as part of your treatment plan because these things still can be curative in an advanced stage. But when we start talking about systemic treatments, there's a branch point in our thinking, and one is with targeted therapies, and that's based on the gene sequences of the changes in the tumor. And Dr. Memmi is going to talk about what's available and newer treatments. And on the other side, we think about these immune-based treatments. And they have very different goals, very different side effects. For the immune-based treatments, we also have several different strategies. The one that people know the most are vaccines. When people think about the immune system and immune therapies, kind of vaccines come to mind. And vaccines have been tried for literally a century in cancer care. And up until recently, the results have been relatively disappointing. However, there's been several advances, some of which were coincident with the COVID pandemic, where technologies changed to a point where we can get specific information quickly, act upon it, and create vaccines. And these vaccines are different than the ones tried in the past. The fundamental difference is they are patient-specific vaccines. And so using current technologies where we can sequence the tumor, figure out what proteins are expressed in the tumor, we can find the ones that a cancer has changed in on its journey to become a cancer. And then using that specific fingerprint of that cancer cell, we can take those changes and put them into a vaccine and use that to alert the body to go after the cells. And that's being tried in clinical trials right now and starting to look promising. So vaccines is what people think about, but what's really dominated the field in the last decade plus have been what we call immune checkpoints. And these are natural regulatory steps of your immune system. If you think about it, we catch a cold, we have a wound that needs to be healed. There's an immune response, but our body is set up to turn off these immune responses so they don't get out of control. If they do get out of control, we have things like autoimmune diseases that happen. So cancer has figured out a way to take advantage of these natural off switches. And so the field's developed what we call checkpoint inhibitors. These are infusions of medications that remove that stop sign that the tumor cells have put up in order to keep the body from recognizing it as a danger and killing it. So with checkpoint therapy, and there's several out there now, from pembrolizumab to ipilimumab, just a whole mouthful of agents, which your doctor can talk to you about, the pros and cons of using what we call monotherapy or combination therapy in order to, again, allow your body to get rid of the cancer. So last couple decades have been dominated by these drugs. They've changed the natural history of the disease in a substantial number of patients. However, they're not the answer for every patient. And we're trying to figure that out. But in the meantime, recently, a new therapy got approved under the immune therapy umbrella, and that's called TILs, or tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes. And this is an immune therapy similar to a transplant, if you're familiar with that idea. A transplant is where we can rejuvenate the immune system by lowering it down and then giving back cells. And in this case, what TILs is doing is a patient with metastatic melanoma that has what we call progressed or failed other available treatments may choose to try this approach where a tumor is cut out, the tumor cells are processed in such a way that they die off, however, the immune cells that are in the tumor expand up to larger numbers. And once we expand these cells, there's a percentage of them in there that were primed and ready to go to kill the tumor, but they weren't being effective. Now, why weren't they being effective? Those are really great scientific things we're trying to figure out. But the way practically we deal with it is once we get those cells from that patient, again, it's a patient-specific treatment, we have the patient come into the hospital, we lower down their immune system that currently is not effective at getting rid of the cancer, and we now replace part of it with these immune cells from the tumor. So that's where the idea of the transplant comes in. And we're stacking the deck. We're trying to get more T cells in there that are specific for killing the tumor. With those cells in place now, we kick them in the butt. And we kick them in the butt by giving them a drug called interleukin-2. We give it for some doses in the hospital setting. This activates these cells to go off and kill the cancer cells. Now, this sounds complicated. It absolutely is complicated. It took literally a life's work, 40 years by Dr. Steven Rosenberg at the NCI to develop this and get this out to patients. So it's a new tool that we have in the armamentarium. More new tools are coming. We have our cancer meeting in about a month here where we're hoping to see more clinical trial data come forward. And I guess I'll leave that as a plug for clinical trial data. All of these things that I've just discussed have come from clinical trials, and currently we need more tools. So if there is an opportunity to participate in clinical studies, talk to your physician about it. I totally encourage it to be at least considered as part of your treatment plan so we can find these new therapies. So with that, I'll conclude up and just summarize that immune therapies are an exciting tool in melanoma care, but they're not the only answer, and Dr. Memmi is going to talk about another answer. And then Dr. Tattersall is going to tell us how to mitigate some of the side effects that we bring to patients. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Daniels. That was a superb presentation, just an excellent presentation. And I'm going to move on now to our next speaker. And our next speaker is Dr. Inderjit Memmi. And Dr. Memmi is Medical Oncology, Cutaneous Malignancies, Vangelis Clinic and Research Institute, Cedars-Sinai affiliate. And Dr. Memmi will be addressing targeted therapy and the role of precision medicine, clinical trial updates, how research increases your treatment options, and key questions to ask when communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Memmi.
Hello, everybody. This is Inderjit Memmi, a medical oncologist at the Angeles Clinic, and thank you for the invitation to talk about this very important topic in melanoma, early stage or late. So as Dr. Daniels indicated that, when you're looking at either localized or advanced disease, there are certain drivers that we can evaluate for potential therapeutic options. So starting off with that, about 40 to 45% of all skin melanomas have a gene alteration called the BRAF, B-R-A-F. And the two key mutations, V600E or V600K, are very predominant. Of those mutated BRAF gene, about 90% of them are those two that I mentioned. And there's been a lot of work that's gone into developing drugs towards these mutations. I think the analogy that everybody uses is that some of these cancers have a mutation that is a sort of a broken on switch for cell growth and metastases. And by giving certain drugs that are able to turn that switch off, we're able to improve the outcomes in cancer. So as I said, about 40 to 45% of the skin melanoma have a BRAF mutation. Another roughly about 20% have another mutation called NRAS, N-R-A-S. That's a driver mutation. And a handful of the patient will have an NF, F as in Frank, 1 mutation. Now, a number of different clinical trials have led to approval of three different combination of BRAF and MEK targeting drugs. Unfortunately, there are not any approved drugs for the NRAS or NF1 mutation, but there's an ongoing work. The three different combinations that are available currently are Teflonar and Mekinist, Encorafenib and Imitinib, and Vemurafenib and Covimitinib, and all those have different side effect profile, and we think they're equally effective in controlling BRAF mutated melanomas. And for the NRAS mutated melanomas, right now there are ongoing clinical trials that are looking at what's the best combination to approach it with to improve outcomes. So for the NRAS mutation melanoma, clinical trials are definitely something to seek out and see if the participation is possible to improve outcomes in NRAS mutation melanoma. Same thing with NF1. We don't have a current target drug. Again, clinical trial participation is extremely encouraged, so we can have some answers for those individuals with NF1 mutation. As far as what's coming up in these mutated melanomas, I think all of the patients that I see in my clinic, they always receive a next-gen sequencing analysis on the tumor that allows me to look at, you know, if they have a BRAF mutation, an NRAS mutation, NF1, CDKN2A, any of the mutations that could potentially be leveraged for therapeutic options. Now, some of these mutations that will pop up on these NGS reports, we may not have a drug for it, but we could potentially have a clinical trial. For example, ASCO, American Society of Clinical Oncology, is leading a trial called TAPER, where we're trying to match a drug to the existing mutation in melanoma. For example, CDKN2A is a cell cycle, the growth and division cycle protein that is often mutated or deleted or amplified, and that leads to unregulated growth of cancer. And in this particular TAPER trial option, we're using some of the drugs that are already approved, for example, in breast cancer, abemaciclib, and we're trying to see if that could be used in the CDKN2A mutated melanomas to improve outcomes. Similarly, there are a number of other mutations that could potentially be leveraged for drugs that are already approved to see if those could be the answer for some of our patients. In addition, when we look at the NGS report, each of the individual oncologists will go over what other mutations. For example, some of the mutations that are more common in non-small cell lung cancer, like ROS1 or ALK gene rearrangements, those could potentially, if present, and the percentage of the patient who will have these gene rearrangements is very small, around, I would say less than 5%. But if it's present, then, you know, that again could be leveraged with a drug that's already approved. So the precision oncology comes into play in a very strong manner, because now we're looking at what is the genetic makeup or genetic mistakes within the melanoma that could potentially be a target for our therapeutic option. And there are a number of different companies that run these kind of tests, and all of them are very much equal to each other. So talk to your oncologist, and they would, you know, definitely should be looking at an NGS report and what other mutations are potentially possible that would allow one's participation in clinical trials, and hopefully leverage that for a better outcome. With respect to what's coming up, for example, in BRAF mutated melanomas or NRAS or NF1, there are ongoing clinical trials that are looking at if a patient progresses on their BRAF medications, are there subsequent therapies targeting the same pathway that could be leveraged for better outcomes? We at our site, we have a number of clinical trials that allow you to sort of look at that. And the story is still developing. I'm not saying that this is the answer. I think down the road we will see some newer drugs that would allow us to recapture responses in patients who've progressed on BRAF-targeted therapy. And I think some of that data was presented at AACR in San Diego. And we hope to see more of that data in ASCO and ESMO down the line. And similarly for NRAS mutation, in the pathway of cellular growth and division, there's a pathway called the MAP kinase pathway, and BRAF and NRAS are all component of that pathway. And we're trying to figure out better ways to sort of turn that on switch, broken on switch, to an off position to improve outcomes in metastatic melanoma. And lastly, what I'd like to mention is about, I'd say about 4% of all cutaneous melanoma or all melanoma in general can potentially have a BRAF gene rearrangement that is pathogenic, meaning that is the driver of the cancer. And there are a number of ongoing clinical trials that are actually looking at combination approaches with targeted therapy to leverage that to improve outcomes, and we've seen some good results with that. So again, precision oncology holds a very, very important place in melanoma care, from stage 3 to advanced stage 4 disease. There's already been a trial with dabrafenib and trametinib in stage 3 and onwards that's been resected, and patients been rendered disease-free. And treating those patients with 1 year of trametinib and dabrafenib to reduce risk of recurrences. And at the ASCO, I think they're having a 5 or 10 year follow-up and overall survival update from that particular trial. So we'd be tuned in for that outcome analysis. So in summary, there are a number of different options in metastatic melanoma in the context of targeted therapy. We've already have been using BRAF as a target in melanoma. There are new developments in NRAS and NF1 and CDKN2A mutated melanomas, but those are within the clinical trial context. So if you are a newly diagnosed melanoma patient or, has the unfortunate event of progressing on your immunotherapy, the next question you should be talking to your oncologist about is, what are some of the mutations present in my melanoma, and how can we leverage those for a therapeutic option? I think that's probably one of the most important questions in the next line of therapy after immunotherapy has been sort of, used off. After this, I'll turn over to Dr. Tetrasel.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Memi. That was an excellent presentation. I'm sure there are lots of questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Tetrasel. and Dr. Ian Tattersall. And Dr. Tattersall is an oncodermatologist. He's at NYU Langone Perlmutter Cancer Center, assistant professor Ronald O. Perlman, Department of Dermatology, NYU Grossman School of Medicine. And Dr. Tattersall will be addressing tips for caring for your skin during and after cancer, including sun and wind safety recommendations, preventing and controlling treatment side effects, symptoms, discomfort, and pain, and guidelines to prepare for telehealth medicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, follow-up care, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Tattersall.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Messner. So just to introduce myself to you all, I'm Dr. Tattersall, and I'm an oncodermatologist, which is to say I'm a subspecialist of dermatologists that specializes particularly in the treatment of skin toxicity of cancer and cancer therapy. So I'm going to be dividing my talk in two broad sections, one talking about the more dermatologic-focused side of caring for cancer patients and things that you need to know about your skin as a cancer patient. And then in the second half, just more broadly speaking about tips for, you know, getting the most out of your appointments with your doctors and your healthcare team. The first thing to know is some general tips about being treated for cancer. And that is whatever treatment that you're getting, if you're being treated for melanoma, there are a few things that you can do to sort of maximize your benefit and maximize your comfort. One is to remember that, you know, patients with melanoma often have an extensive history of sun exposure and are at risk not only for developing new melanomas, but also developing non-melanoma skin cancers. And we know that a major driver for all of this is sun exposure. And while a lot of that sun exposure is in the past, not things you can necessarily control, it's never too late to start controlling that. And we certainly know that, you know, new efforts to prevent or minimize sun exposure are really helpful in both decreasing your likelihood of getting future primary skin cancers and in reducing some of your toxicity from the medications, which I'll get into in a minute. In terms of sun protection, you know, our best practices are you want to try to stay out of the sun during its peak hours. That's anywhere from 10 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon, any time that your shadow is shorter than you are. If you are out in the sun, we always prefer the use of, you know, SPF-rated or thick, opaque clothing, a large, broad hat with a brim that goes all the way around. And then, of course, sunscreen. You know, we recommend at least an SPF 30 or higher sunscreen applied over all of the areas of your skin that are, you know, exposed to sunlight. And that always needs to be applied a little bit more than you think, like a little bit higher quantity of sunscreen than you think, a little bit more frequently than you think it does. And be especially careful of windy days because wind reduces heat, but it does not reduce sunlight. So you can get tricked into thinking that you're getting a lot less sun than you really are. When you undergo therapy for melanoma, as Dr. Daniels and Dr. Memmi spoke about, there are a number of different types of medication and families of medication that you can be treated with. And while melanoma treatment has come a long way from the sort of classic age of chemotherapy with patients, you know, losing hair and that sort of those sort of side effects that are perhaps better known and feared, these treatments are still very strong medications, and they do have risks of skin toxicity. And many of those risks are specific to the treatment themselves. So, for instance, targeted therapy, targeting the BRAF and MEK pathways, often will cause a coincident acne or sometimes some changes in the nails, either fingernails or toenails. And whereas treatment with immunotherapy can cause a variety of skin problems related to, as Dr. Daniels is saying, overactivating the immune system is extremely helpful in treating cancer, but it can also cause inflammatory disease of a number of different varieties, both on the skin and elsewhere in the body. And, you know, some general keys about helping ameliorate these things are, one, you know, to do your best to keep your skin well moisturized and sun protected, but also to continue to talk with your oncology team. Let them know about your symptoms and things that are causing you discomfort, any new things that you've noticed since you're starting therapy, and really ask for their advice or potentially to see someone like me who's more specialized in helping patients kind of treat the specific symptoms that are being caused by their medications. A lot of these medications, including the BRAF and MEK inhibitors, are photosensitizing, so they do get worse in the sun, so even more of an incentive to stay out of the sun and protect yourself as best you can. But really, the hallmark and the take-home here is you have to talk with your team, not just about any symptoms you may be noticing on your skin, but really anything that's coming up while you're on treatment, because they're there for you, and they're very interested in identifying any problems that may be arising and getting you the resources to take care of them before they become bigger problems. And that kind of dovetails well into the second portion of this, which is how to think about your visits with your doctor, be they in person or increasingly these days over telehealth or telemedicine. And I just have a few more general tips for both, you know, be it a visit with your oncologist or your dermatologist or your cardiologist or whoever else. First of all, if you are using telehealth or telemedicine, make sure you're familiar with how the interface and how the technology works. Usually, telehealth systems allow you to do a practice login or a dry run before your visit, and that's going to be really important to do because otherwise you may find yourself with a minute left to your appointment trying to click through screens or figuring out that something doesn't work on your phone or on your iPad. So, you know, it's always best to prepare for that as much as you can, just so that you're not rushing at the last moment. Visits with doctors are overwhelming. They are, by their very nature, you know, you're going to have a lot of things thrown at you. You're going to have a lot of treatment options presented. There are going to be a lot of things that are spoken about that are going to be challenging to file into the appropriate places and to come up with good responses in the moment. So there are a few things that are really important for you to do when thinking about your visits with your doctors. And one is really to put down a list of concerns, a list of questions, a list of things that you want to make sure that you end the visit by having addressed. And that way you don't get so caught up in something that the doctor said or a tangent that you and your providers went down that you missed the things that were important to you at the start of the visit. And another is I often recommend, you know, if at all possible, to have somebody else with you, just so that you know, two heads being better than one, someone else can kind of step in while you're processing information to help advocate or help make sure that any of the talking points that you wanted to address get addressed. It's also worth noting, you know, in follow-up, you will have a whole team when you're undergoing cancer care. It's not just the oncologist, but it's the physician extenders, the NPs or the PAs in the program or the clinical trial nurses, and all of them are available to you. So make sure you know what numbers to call, how to use the physician messaging system, and make sure that you know how to get in touch with the team to communicate any concerns or anything new that might come up during your treatment course. And lastly, I did want to discuss the concept of open notes, which is that these days in the U.S., it is a legal requirement for us as doctors and as hospitals that all of our notes are and all of our test results immediately become available to you. And that's good because it gives you access to all of your healthcare documentation. But it is also something you have to be a little bit careful about because a lot of this information is meant for doctors. It's not prepared in a way to be easily accessible or interpretable by patients. So while you do have access to all of this information, you know, you'll be able to see your scans, your biopsy results, your notes from your oncologist. It may be that you don't want to listen to those or read those on your own. And so I do encourage you to talk about that concept, about this idea that you can see these notes with your oncologist and your team and come up with a plan for how you are going to do these things. Because the last thing that we want is for you to be reading a result that's maybe written in medical jargon that you don't understand and worrying unnecessarily before the team has a chance to discuss it with you. And so, yeah, my take-home messages for this are, on the one hand, that, you know, the skin is a really important part of cancer treatment, and it's something that is important to address and stay in touch with your team while you are undergoing therapy. And that, you know, this is this kind of thing, these visits are stressful and a bit of a minefield and are things that you want to just prepare as much as you can for so that you get the most out of the visits with your healthcare team, and so that they're best able to address your concerns and help you get the best results possible.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Tattersall. That was an excellent presentation. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Kylie LaPera, and she is a Chief Executive Officer for the Melanoma Research Foundation. And she'll be addressing the free programs and services of the Melanoma Research Foundation, as well as giving you some of their contact information as well. So it's my pleasure now, and she also collaborated on today's program. So she's a partner organization on today's program, and it's my pleasure now to introduce to you my esteemed colleague, Ms. LaPera.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for partnering with the Melanoma Research Foundation. It's so wonderful to have a partner like Cancer Care. And it's wonderful to note that we have over 200 people listening and people in the UK and Canada. And, you know, melanoma is obviously a disease that unfortunately is increasing in diagnosis. And it's really important that we provide resources to the patient and caregiver community about what they can access and what's available to them. So we greatly appreciate the opportunity to be here during Melanoma Awareness Month and share some of our resources that can hopefully both empower and help many of the patients who are dealing with a melanoma diagnosis. So just to give a little bit of background, the Melanoma Research Foundation is based in Washington, D.C., but we're a national organization, and we were founded 28 years ago by a patient. And I think, you know, over the course of this call today, you know, you're hearing about a lot of the great, wonderful treatments that are now available to patients. But 28 years ago, there were very few treatments available. In fact, there were only three FDA-approved treatments for metastatic melanoma. So there's definitely a lot of hope and a lot of encouragement about what's available to patients. And as an advocacy organization, we exist for patients. So we not only fund research, and we've funded over $25 million in research to date, but we also educate patients, caregivers, and the general public about melanoma, as well as advocate on the issues that impact melanoma patients, both on the state and federal level. So we're an excellent resource for patients. You can find us at melanoma.org. I want to highlight a few of the key programs we have that are really important for patients who are dealing with metastatic melanoma, and we are available for these patients, and we have a lot that we can provide. So I want to highlight just a few of the things today, but you can really review all of our resources at melanoma.org. So in terms of patient programming, every month we have webinars. They're called Ask the Expert, where we touch on topics that are relevant to the patient and caregiver community. And you heard earlier about TIL therapy, which was an approval that happened just a few months ago. And whenever there's a new approval, there's a lot of questions from the patient community. So we actually did a webinar about TIL therapy, or Amtagvi, as it's called. That's the drug name, to really give patients an idea of what that treatment is, what's involved, and if it might be something for them to consider. We also have a clinical trial finder. So again, we've talked a little bit about clinical trials today. There are many clinical trials for melanoma patients, which is very exciting. However, there's also inclusion or exclusion criteria, which basically means if you are able to participate in the clinical trial or not. We have a tool on our website that will take your information and provide you with all of the clinical trials that would be applicable to you that you're not excluded from. We also have a nurse navigator on staff who will help you if you identify a clinical trial that you want to learn more about or move forward with getting information on. Mm-hmm. So we have a program called Ask a Nurse, and you can email our Ask a Nurse at askanurse@melanoma.org, or you can call our Ask a Nurse as well. We have that contact information on our website. So if you are interested in a clinical trial, if you have a question and you don't know who to ask, you know, we really encourage people to reach out and talk to our oncology nurse on staff who's available and will respond within 24 hours of getting your email or call. We also have a treatment center finder. So if you are in an area, I heard earlier there are people in rural communities who are on this call. If you don't know where you can be treated, we have a treatment center finder on our website as well, which identifies treatment centers within your geographic area. So that is another tool and resource for you all to use. We also have a plethora of educational materials that you can order for free and will be shipped to you. And you can order those directly off our website at melanoma.org. And then we have videos. We have these animated patient videos that really explain some of these medical concepts and distill them down into 7 to 9 minute animations. And we actually have a video on TIL therapy. So if anyone is interested in learning more on that, we have that on our website as well. So there's a host of resources, many ways to find information. Just released this week, we have a new patient guide for 0 to 1 melanoma. I know it's not applicable for those who are on this call right now. But it's also, we talked about prevention and, you know, early detection, and that guide, 0 to 1, certainly highlights ways that you can protect yourself and be aware of the dangers of UV exposure. So, again, I'm just really grateful to be able to share some of these resources with you all today. We know it can be very overwhelming as a patient navigating all of these things. And we are here for you. That's why advocacy groups exist. So I just encourage anyone to reach out, melanoma.org, for all of our free resources and offerings. And if you need anything, someone from our team will respond immediately. So thank you again for partnering with the MRF, and look forward to questions later.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was an excellent presentation, a wonderful resource for our participants. I just want to say a few words also about cancer care services as well, but certainly the Melanoma Research Foundation focuses specifically on melanoma. So Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization, and we provide services. A lot of people contact us on our HOPE line, 1-800-813-4673, or visit our website at www.cancercare.org. And I should say that any of the resources we give out today, you'll all be getting a SurveyMonkey evaluation a couple of days after the program today. And although it's an evaluation of the program, it also will include all the resources we offer, any of the speakers have mentioned, so that if you were trying to write everything down, you'll be getting it also in the SurveyMonkey. There'll be resources for you as well. What do you get from cancer care? So a lot of people call our HOPE line and speak to one of our oncology social workers. We have about 40 of them. So they take turns answering the phone, and there is no wait time to get to speak to somebody to one of our social workers. And usually people call for specific help, either with help with transportation or for support services or an online support group. And usually the social worker addresses that concern and then discusses all the other services we offer. So those services do include transportation to treatment, help with the cost of that. Also, we do have a copay foundation, so that helps to pay for medications that might be too costly for you to manage. We also offer a number of different online support groups, and online support groups for every type of diagnosis, so that's another resource for all of you. And then, in addition to that, we also offer a number of publications and fact sheets, again, on melanoma and all other types of cancers as well as coping tips and things like that. So that gives you a thumbnail sketch of all that we do, but there's much more, and you can visit our website to find out more. Now, in people living with metastatic melanoma, participating in clinical trials as a treatment option. 1 is the highest rating and 5 the lowest rating. And now we have time to take your questions, and I'm going to ask Regina to bring all of our speakers on board, and we're going to try to take as many of questions as possible. Regina, if you explain to people how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only, and you may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So this question for Dr. Daniels, are there genetic testing for melanoma in families?
Yes. So you know, usually part of the initial assessment of somebody is to talk about their personal family cancer history. And so if we see clues in there, such as early cancers or cancers that tend to cluster together with genes, we'll think about making a referral to family genetics. And, you know, there are different estimates out there for the percentage of cancers related to family genes that we can identify. And I will just say that we can't identify the family genes a lot, but we can see that they're running in families, and that's because people share risk factors that don't necessarily trace back to a specific gene that causes melanoma. But, for example, the complexion of the family or where the family locates are all factors, too, that may kind of look like a familial cancer syndrome. So we look at family history. We look at pattern of moles on a patient. All give us clues if there's a genetic familial trait, and then we'll make a referral.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you. And a question for Dr. Memmi. What is the difference between the targeted treatments nivolumab and ipilimumab? Why are they used together?
Actually, that is considered an immunotherapy because nivolumab is a PD-1 checkpoint inhibitor that Dr. Daniels went over along with ipilimumab, which is a CTLA-4 blocker. Those are approved based on a clinical trial called CheckMate 067, showed a remarkable response in advanced untreated metastatic melanoma. And now we have about 7.5 to 10 year day follow-up data that patients who had a complete response or partial response, they went on to have a durable response and not needing any therapy subsequently. So we've got really good results on it. It is not considered a targeted therapy. It is an immunotherapy, meaning we're using these drugs to take some of the natural breaks that Dr. Daniels talked about off the immune system to eradicate melanoma.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And for Dr. Tattersall, I have a severe reaction to Keytruda that was diagnosed by biopsy as psoriasis. Sunlight has shown to clear psoriasis. I feel sun-starved. Does sunscreen filter out the benefits of sun exposure? Thank you.
Sure. That's a great question. And certainly, you know, immunotherapy can cause a variety of skin conditions, including psoriasis. And it can also, if you have a little bit of pre-existing psoriasis, it can become flared on immunotherapy. You're completely correct that sunlight, it can be beneficial for some cases, for many cases of psoriasis. And, you know, it may seem a little counterintuitive that, okay, we're asking you to both, you know, get some sun exposure to help psoriasis, but also generally protect yourself from the sun. The fact is that the amount of sun that you need to be therapeutic for psoriasis is on the order of about 10 minutes of exposure 3 times a week or so. So it's really very, very little compared to the amount of sun exposure that, you know, you get from going to the beach or you know, being any in any sort of other high exposure environment. It's also true that many dermatology offices offer something called phototherapy, which is narrowband UVB therapy, which uses a single wavelength of UV light to mimic the beneficial effects of sunlight while minimizing the associated cancer risk. So, you know, there is certainly a role for ultraviolet therapy and in some cases sun exposure in the treatment of psoriasis. But that's something to kind of talk over more with your healthcare team or with a dermatologist. And also just to be aware that although sunlight is one thing that we can use to treat psoriasis associated with immunotherapy, there are many, many other things. And so we have a pretty big toolkit for dealing with psoriasis, much of which is compatible with continuing to be on immunotherapy.
Excellent. And I'm going to ask Dr. Daniels, is a satellite melanoma considered metastatic?
So satellite is a term we use to talk about melanoma that's spread around the original lesion. A similar word is in-transit disease. And so what that represents are cells that are going towards a lymph node in the lymph channel. And so technically it is stage 3 disease because it's not in the bloodstream. It's gone in the lymph channel. And so when we see that, it raises our level of concern because it's declaring that the cancer has those tendencies to spread. And we'll look for metastatic disease, but satellite or in-transit disease is technically not metastatic disease.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, I want to thank our participants. It's been an extraordinary call, and I also want to thank our speakers, really, because this has been, although we've done a program on this before, the questions have been really fantastic, and I have to say this discussion has been really just wonderful. And what I would like at this point is to ask our speakers to provide a takeaway for our participants, what they'd like people to take away from today's call. And so I'm going to start with Dr. Daniels and then Dr. Memmi and then Dr. Tattersall and then Ms. LaPera. So I'll start with Dr. Daniels, just a takeaway that you'd like people to take away from today's call today.
Sure. I guess one takeaway is that really melanoma care over the last 10 to 15 years has changed dramatically. Our understanding of what makes the cancer grow and the tools that we have changed. And so while we still don't have the answers for every patient, I think I would come into it with some hope that the tools that we have currently do have benefit, and that every day we're making some progress.
Excellent. And Dr. Remy?
I wanted to second what Dr. Daniel has summarized. I think in the last 10 to 15 years, we have had a remarkable, if I could use the word explosion in a positive manner, of therapeutic options for our melanoma patients, from immunotherapeutics, from targeted therapy, for cellular therapy. I think with every approval through the FDA mechanism, I think we're getting very close to the goalpost to get almost all of the patients in control or in remission or long-term control of disease. And while on that path, we know that most of these therapies have significant side effects. And I think melanoma oncologists in general are very in tuned to taking care of these patients and these recognizing these side effects at their earliest possible point so we can improve them before we start talking about discontinuation of therapy. So I think this all happens with the patient's courage to participate in clinical trials. So not only we learn about new therapies, we also learn about the adverse events or side effects that come along with it and how to manage them most appropriately so we can keep these therapies on to keep the patient's control and make sure they see their kids' graduations and birthdays and so on and so forth. So I think it is important for all patients to consider clinical trials to improve the therapeutic options and also learning about the new side effects.
Well, thank you so much. And Dr. Tattersall?
Yes, I mean, I'd like to echo Dr. Memmi's statement to some degree, but, you know, the care of cancer, including and perhaps especially melanoma, has advanced hugely, but these medications can often pose challenges. You know, they can cause a lot of side effects, but the care of those side effects is also something that your healthcare team is really committed to. And that the more you can work with us and let us know as soon as you become aware of any side effects emerging, the quicker we can get you triaged and that we can help nip these things in the bud before they develop into more serious issues. And just to know that a lot, many, many, many of the side effects associated with cancer treatment can be safely managed without significant disruption of your care. So it's always good to keep us in the loop and make sure that we know what's going on with you so that we can take care of you as best we can.
Excellent. And Ms. Lapera?
Yeah, I think, you know, my big takeaway, and I think it was the same takeaway that I've shared in previous years, is really to be your own best advocate is to really educate yourself. It's so important to have the knowledge and the resources and to ask the questions. And I think earlier on the podcast, we talked about questions to ask your doctor and being prepared for those and writing them down and bringing someone with you. And all of those things are just vitally important so that the doctors can do what they need to do and you can focus on being well and healing. And I think the more information that you or your caregiver can read and arm themselves with, you know, the more prepared you will be to fight this disease. And clearly there are many brilliant minds working on this right now, and there's a lot of really exciting things. And I would make sure that you never discount clinical trials, that you always remain open to other options and the clinical trials that are out there as well. Because as we talked about earlier, there are still elements of this disease that we don't have FDA-approved drugs for, and it's just vitally important to make sure that you keep your options open and ask all those questions of your doctor.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And it's a wonderful resource. So, again, everyone will be getting information about the Melanoma Research Foundation as a place to call. Remember, they do have an Ask a Nurse component, and there are many other components that you'd be able to access and that would make a big difference in terms of your care. Also, I just want to say that most importantly, you know, you've learned a lot today from the program, and nevertheless, if you asked a question, if you have a question that you're in queue and didn't get to ask just because of the number of people on the call today, or if you I'm thinking of a question, I would say for all of you, go back to Treating Healthcare Team and ask them the question. And also take advantage of the resources that we are going to provide to you as well as additional resources to get information. Because it's very important, I think, as Ms. Lapera said, it's very important to be very active, very much of an advocate for yourself and for your loved one. Sometimes it's a family member who's the advocate. Sometimes it's you and the family and the person with melanoma being the advocate. But definitely be as strong an advocate as you can be. That's very important. I would not want anyone to leave today's program feeling that you're alone. I want you to now know that you're part of the community support. You have the Melanoma Research Foundation. You have Cancer Care. And you have all the other resources that we do mention on the materials that we send out to all of you. So please recognize that there's lots of resources out there for you. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.